6 years old. He had left it at 19 to join the army in 1914. My mother, an orphan, had been brought up by nuns. Neither had had any training in the management of a family or a domestic budget, and they had enjoyed a high standard of living by being permanently in debt. Further, they had 7 children. Bankruptcy was inevitable once the Depression set in and dividends dried up. The remainder of our servants left in a body, while Mother was still in hospital, and I was left to manage the home as best as I could until we moved to Liverpool. One of our unpaid domestics took the opportunity, while my parents were absent, to take away my mother's entire wardrobe, leaving her only the outfit she had been wearing when she was whisked into hospital. Father had no knowledge of the legal rights of a bankrupt to clothing and bedding, so he sent the key of our house to his main creditor, a moneylender, with instructions to sell the house and its contents and to reimburse himself from the proceeds. From a misguided sense of honour, he left everything we possessed, except the clothing in which he and his family were dressed, taking only a pair of blankets in which to wrap my mother and the new baby, Edward. Then, with his last £10 in cash, he bought tickets on the train to Liverpool, which was his birthplace. He remembered Liverpool as a bustling, wealthy city, and hoped to find employment there, perhaps as an accountant in a shipping company. Having lived for years in prosperous southern market towns, he could not visualise what the Depression was doing to the north of England. He could not imagine that a man who desired work would not be able to find it. Liverpool looked a dreadfully dismal place to my untutored eyes. Water swirled along the gutters, carrying a horrid collection of garbage. Across the road, the fine Corinthian pillars of St. George's Hall looked like a row of rotting teeth, and to my right, down William Brown Street, marched a series of equally large black buildings. When I peeked farther out of the station, I could see the entrance of a big theatre, the Empire, and farther along at the corner was a public house, the Legs of Man, near which a number of seamen stood laughing and joking, oblivious to the rain. Much later on, a sailor told me that sooner or later everybody in the world passed the Legs of Man, and if you waited long enough you could meet there anybody you cared to look for. Certainly it was a great meeting place. Along the pavement, men in shabby cloth caps shuffled from litter bin to sift through the garbage for food and cigarette ends. In the gutter stood 4 unemployed Welsh miners, caps held hopefully out while they sang over and over again in sad tenor voices, "Land of Our Fathers," and All Through the Night. "Are you lost?" I jumped, and Avril stopped wailing. A policeman, water running down his cape and helmet, was bending over us, his red face concerned. "No, thank you," I said primly, and, since he continued to look down at us doubtfully, I added, "Mummy is in the waiting room." He smiled in a friendly fashion. "Better go back to her, love," he said. "Lime Street is no place for a nice young lady, and you'll get wet." Reluctantly, I retraced my steps to the waiting room. Father had been away 4 hours or more. Baby Edward had not been fed and was crying lustily. Brian and Tony, aged 6 and 5 respectively, were playing tag round and round the high varnish benches. Despite his determined effort at playing, I could see that Brian was afraid. Taut and dark as an Indian, so highly strung that he suffered constantly from nightmares. His little hands were clenched tight and his heart-shaped face was grim. Tony was playing the game with his usual cool care, watching his elder brother closely so as to anticipate every move he made. His mind seemed to work with such intelligence that it was as if he had been born with a brain already mature and furnished with knowledge. Sometimes, when I stroked his silky flaxen head, I was almost unnerved by the idea of the latent power beneath my hand. Fiona, age 9, was still sitting silently by my mother, nursing her favourite doll, her huge pale blue eyes wide with dumb fear. We all loved Fiona.